Welcome to the Sunstone Podcast, everyone, where there is always more than one way to Mormon. I'm Stephen Carter, and I'm here to introduce this week's episode. As I've looked through the names of people who have donated so generously to Sunstone during the past years, I've noticed something unique about them. They tend to use Mormonism as a gin spike, which, I know, sounds like an alcoholic drink, but it's actually more interesting than that. See, one day, probably 20 years ago, I was out in rural Wyoming helping my father-in-law, Ross, do some surveying. Being the strong hunk of man I am, I was assigned to hold the reflector while Ross handled the theodolite. We were surveying near a county road, and at one point, we had to put down a marker in the middle of that road. So Ross takes out a 5-inch metal spike and pounds it into the asphalt with a hammer. Pretty tough spike, I said. They tend to be, Ross told me. They have to live two lives. He pulled another spike out of his truck and he handed it to me. I looked at it closely and I saw that it wasn't just a spike. Its head tapered toward the middle, like a flat top pyramid. And it looked like a gear. The spike itself had a kind of sawtooth on both sides. It's called a gin spike, Ross said. They start out as part of a cotton picker, but eventually they wear out. But surveyors found a use for them. You can pound them into asphalt, and those teeth on the side will keep it in. The tapered head makes sure that nothing like a snowplow gets hung up on it. And the fact that it's magnetic makes it really easy to find. It's the perfect semi-permanent surveying marker. Most people at Sunstone have gone through a faith crisis where either Mormonism doesn't seem to fit them anymore, or they don't seem to fit Mormonism. It's like the gin spike that wears out. But a lot of Sunstoners have found creative ways to make use of that gin spike, even if it was on the junk pile for a while. They claim Mormonism in their own way, doing something unique and useful with it. I'm grateful that I've been able to interact with these people so much during the past years. They were there when I needed someone to help me work through my own faith crisis. I love to meet back up with them at Sunstone conferences. I love to read their words in the magazine and online. And each year, they're also the ones who donate to Sunstone. See, Sunstone only covers its event and publication costs with registration fees and subscriptions. Everything else, the rent, the electricity, insurance, salaries, internet hosting fees, and on, are funded exclusively by donations. It's a testament to the goodness of this community that we've had enough funding for more than 4 decades to reach out to Mormons at their most difficult times. Thanks for being such an essential part of that work. As we head into the next year, we'd love to hear from you. We're interested in your thoughts on how we can better serve this generation of seekers. And your donation will go a long way toward helping that vision come to fruition. Get things rolling at sunstone.org/donate. We Mormons are kind of a weird bunch. We're both the most conservative folks ever and the most liberal. In our early years, you know, we were way more communalistic than capitalistic. But today, capitalism is essentially an article of faith. And then, for the past, like, 100 years, we've all but become the poster child for heterosexual monogamy. But during the years before that, we made polygamy a central tenet of our religion. We practically went to war with the United States over it. But when we think about polygamy, we only think about one form of it. You know, one man married to multiple women. The man is the hub and the women are the spokes, and the man is in charge. But there are plenty of other ways to think about polygamy that are much more egalitarian and provide for a larger range of relationships. Those possibilities are what today's episode is about. The first presenter is Brady Williams. He is a former Mormon fundamentalist and one of the stars on the TLC reality television series, My Five Wives. not to be confused with Cody Brown on Sister Wives. The second presenter is Blair Osler, who was the author of Queer Mormon Theology and a former co-host of the Sunstone podcast. This episode was recorded at the 2018 Sunstone Summer Symposium.
I remember sitting in this classroom where the cinder block walls had been painted over one too many times, a pale yellow that looked like rubber. I couldn't have been more than 10 years old. I'm old enough that the Sunday school teacher was still scratching on a green chalkboard the answers to her question. The list was of the world's greatest sins. She had asked the class to call out everything they could think of: murder, adultery, and then polygamy. Weird that a cute little girl with long brown hair would be the first person to introduce a concept that would forever change my life. In the West, meaning Europe and the United States, many share this little girl's belief that polygamy is a sin. But much of the world still holds that polygamy is a virtuous and deific mandate. I was among them. 30 years later, I would find myself a leader of the Mormon fundamentalist polygamous group, the Apostolic United Brethren, or AUB. I drank the Kool-Aid pretty deep. It was blue and it was delicious. I'm talking snarky, but true. I really thought that because I was a member of the AUB and held the priesthood and had received many of the ordinances and had 5 united wives and worked in their temple and was a 70 apostle and was the bishop and was white and was a man and was heterosexual, that I was somehow better than all those who couldn't say those same things. I believed that God looked down on me as one of his chosen ones. I was in a position of privilege and power over my wives. I was a patriarch. I have since left the AUB, having embraced a progressive worldview in place of the fundamentalist one of my childhood and early adulthood. With this progressiveness came the realization of the hypocrisy of my marriage. I had married 5 women while a member of the AUB. We, the 6 of us, all innocently lived by the rules of patriarchy. I was the head of the family and ruled with my wives by my side. I was taught that these 5 women were to be as jewels in my crown, and that if I proved worthy, would one day be their lord and king. I cringe at how unabashedly I believe this drivel. After years of critical thinking and the reading of many challenging works, my wives and I became convinced the life of a traditional polygamist and the ideal of patriarchy was something we did not want for our family. I believe if traditional fundamentalist polygamists would consider a progressive critique of their worldview, many would embrace an alternative view. Sadly, many shrink from this evolution out of the fear of losing their families. We certainly experienced this fear. It need not be a zero-sum outcome. One can relinquish the idea of male superiority and rule without abandoning one's polygamous marriage. The following is an effort to provide a viable polygamous alternative that abandons traditional patriarchal polygamy while embracing a new progressive ideal. First, polygamy is generally considered a depraved lifestyle, and justifiably so. For thousands of years, women within polygamy have suffered at the hands of men. More than just the subjugation of women, polygamous sects have been guilty of all brands of bigotry, race, gender, and sociopolitical are just a few. There is a dark history of abuse being perpetrated within polygamous sects, and many continue to this day. But, as I will show, it would be a mistake to think that these evils only exist in polygamy. Indeed, they find their advent in monogamy. Perhaps when referring to traditional polygamy, I should instead say traditional patriarchal polygamy. All of the moral problems with polygamy can be blamed on patriarchy and not the multiplicity of one's spouses. I suggest that the issue is not more than one spouse, but the subservience and virtual ownership of one spouse by another. This is not peculiar to polygamy. In fact, it all started with monogamy, as I said. It's called patriarchy. In The Origin of the Family, Private Property in the State, Frederick Engels, through an examination of the teleological history of the family, shows how women went from a position of power to the role of the subjugated sex. Engels gives a broad history of the role of women within the family institution, giving a clear description of the advent of monogamy and with it the evils of patriarchy. This need not be how things remain. The status and condition of women can and must change. Women in all marriage types, whether monogamous or polygamous, are subjected to the problems of patriarchy. Solve patriarchy, take away the ability for a man to dominate a woman, and one solves many of the moral problems in marriage, both monogamous and polygamous. If the moral improprieties were eliminated, it would seem that any consenting, informed adult should have the right to marry. Progressive polygamy, a polygamous alternative. As I mentioned, after several years of introspection and rigorous study, my wives and I realized the error of our fundamentalist worldview. Progressive polygamy is the brainchild of our desperation to have our cake and eat it too. We were unwilling to sacrifice either our family or our new beliefs. So the six of us set ourselves to the task of creating a marriage unit which could reconcile these seemingly opposing worldviews. By addressing both the moral problems of patriarchy and the structural problems of the poly lifestyle, a new egalitarian marriage system is possible. There are four parts to making progressive polygamy viable. The first is the abandonment of the gender binary. In progressive polygamy, there can be one man with three women, or one woman and three men. Even three husbands or just five wives are okay. Even three husbands and two wives could work. The numbers and gender of the marriage makeup doesn't matter. Second is the empowering of women outside of just the maternal. In progressive polygamy, all spouses share the responsibility of providing for the day-to-day needs of the family equally. Sharing responsibility does not mean all adults must get a job, rather that there is an agreement about who is best fit to work and when, towards meeting the demands of the family, be it professional or domestic. This would necessarily include female members. A woman within progressive polygamy who once felt it an impossibility to go to university or to pursue a career now finds herself with more adult members in the family who can provide love, devotion, and care for her children. Where once a mother would feel trapped as the only nurturing feminine figure in the home, now there are more mothers and fathers to share in the maternal duties. This is an obvious enabler in the feminist ideal of honoring the maternal as well as inserting oneself into the world outside of the home. Third is the abandonment of patriarchy and the embracing of a progressive worldview. Sadly, in the world today, even in so-called advanced first world countries like the U.S., people still believe in sexist, bigoted drivel. It seems that in order for someone to occupy this mental space, they are answering the call to be a bigot. Abandon this immoral mandate of fundamentalism and stifled thought, and the clarity of progress will have room to manifest. I say again, the problem with polygamy is not the number of spouses one has. It is largely how one treats them. The progressive polygamist must not suffer from these delusions. Treat a spouse with moral aplomb, and the progressive polygamist is halfway to a justification of the poly lifestyle. But even after the moral problem of patriarchy is extinguished, a structural one remains. There has always been a central spouse, and with it, inequity of time and commitment. The fourth part to establish progressive polygamy is perhaps the most tedious and certainly the most underanalyzed, the replacing of the hub-and-spoke structure of traditional polygamy with the egalitarian marriage unit model. In place of the hub-and-spoke model of traditional polygamy, the egalitarian marriage unit has just the will. All spouses are married equally to all other spouses, each enjoying the love, devotion, and commitment of all other spouses, be it money, resources, or time. In this marriage, every spouse is married to every other spouse, much like the polyfidelicious model. It is incumbent on every spouse to view the entirety of the marriage as central. That's really important. And in fact, the entirety of the marriage unit becomes the hub, where the man used to be occupy the hub. The importance of love and devotion being focused on the marriage as a whole rather than just one central spouse. Also, every spouse has equal in access and voice when determining family policy. Using democratic techniques, each person has an equal say regardless of sex or gender, thus creating a politically egalitarian union. It would be up to all participants to determine the nature of the family government, much like there is a multitude of ways for a monogamous couple to run a family. So to sum up progressive polygamy, first and perhaps foremost, one must not be a patriarchal jerk. We live in a world where there is no excuse to remain bigoted. Women should have equal access to every right and privilege that men have. Obviously, this includes marriage and particularly the more historically bigoted variety of traditional polygamy. Second, the structural deficiencies found in traditional polygamy and the hub-and-spoke model must be replaced by the EMU, or Egalitarian Marriage Unit. This will ensure equal access to family government and the right to sex. If this arrangement is not conducive to any of the participants' current worldviews, and this is really important, they should feel unfettered to break the marriage contract and seek companionship elsewhere. While theorizing about the idea of a progressive polygamy is all well and good, I admit that the implementation in real life is much more messy, as is the case with all theories.
So this panel got started because I was on a podcast with Lindsay, her Your Polygamy podcast, and I was talking about an idea called queer polygamy. because I'm weird like that. And she said, this is great. Let's get together and do a sunstone panel. So here I am going to further expand on the theological exploration and explanation of how progressive polygamy can fit into the Mormon, LDS Mormon tradition. According to many accounts of Mormon theology, polygamy, also called celestial marriage, is a necessary mandate for the highest degree of celestial glory. Doctrine and Covenants 131 and 132 tells us that celestial marriage is, and the continuation of the human family is what enables us to become gods, because we will have endless and everlasting increase. Doctrine and Covenants gives a direct warning that if we do not abide by the law of polygamy, also called plural marriage, we cannot attain this glory. The scriptures and prophets state that theosis and plural marriage are intimately intertwined. Brigham Young, being the most notable advocate of mandated polygamy, stated, "The only men who become gods, and even the sons of gods, are those who enter into polygamy." However, he also wrote, "If you desire with all your hearts to obtain the blessings which Abraham attained, you will be polygamous, at least in your faith." It's interesting that he uses the words, at least in your faith. Was this to suggest that a man can not practice polygamy on earth, but will in heaven? Or is this to suggest that a man may never enter into a polygamous marriage, but may live the spirit of polygamy in his heart? Later, Wilford Woodruff remarks that President Young said, there would be men saved in the celestial kingdom of God with one wife, many wives, and with no wives at all. Wilford Woodruff again stated that President Young spoke and said, men may embrace the law of celestial marriage in his heart and not take a second wife and be justified before the Lord. What is to be made of these conflicting statements? How can one embrace the spirit of polygamy and celestial marriage, but remain monogamous with one or even no wives? In this paper, I will refer to the sex-focused, androcentric, patriarchal, heteronormative model of polygamy as the standard model. At a glance, the standard model is a mistake and highly problematic. Though the standard model tends to dominate discourse, a more creative interpretation of what polygamy may include may offer us new insight into what celestial relationships look like. I am suggesting a way to reconcile diverse desires for celestial marriage under a new model I call queer polygamy, which encompasses the spirit of polygamy without mandating specific marital relations. I will begin with an expository of the standard model of polygamy, followed by an expository of the queer model of polygamy, and demonstrate how plural marriage may be redeemed to accommodate diverse relationships and desires, as Wilford Woodruff suggests. I will then point out five common concerns with the standard model of polygamy and how queer polygamy model addresses them. So first, the standard model of polygamy is often reductively described as one man having multiple wives. The man will continue to increase in power and dominion according to the wives and children he accumulates. This means he is eternally sealed to his wives and his children, just like God, Heavenly Father, who must also enter into plural marriage, also called celestial marriage. To attain the highest degree of celestial glory and have eternal increase, a man must enter into polygamy to dwell in his celestial kingdom forever and ever. In this model, the man, or patriarch, is the focus of the narrative with little regard as to what women or children desire. This aesthetic of God and godhood is problematic for many reasons. This view paints a rather androcentric and domineering perspective of what polygamy might look like. Additionally, this makes God an overly anthropomorphized singleton whose power and glory isn't shared with his family and community, but at the expense of his community. If that is the case, this God's power is, as the lone patriarch, not a holy power, but a tyrannical power. I believe queer academia and theology is ripe with possibilities to reconcile these diverse aspirations towards Zion in queer polygamy, which accommodates a potentially infinite number of marital, sexual, romantic, platonic, and celestial relationships. The words queer polygamy almost seem redundant. Polygamy is inherently queer according to contemporary monogamous social expectations. Polygamy, by Western practice, is a deviation from the norm. The words queer polygamy might also seem to imply that one must necessarily be a member of the LGBTQ+ community for these ideas to apply, but this is not the case. Rest assured, heterosexual monogamous couples are an important subset under the umbrella of queer polygamy. A person with one, many, or no spouses can be included in this model. The use of the word queer in queer polygamy is also meant to signify a thoughtful and thorough interpretation of polygamy, which would be inclusive of such diversity that many of its manifestations would rightly be considered queer. As you read, you may find this model strangely foreign, but oddly in harmony with Mormon theology from a logical and practical approach. The standard model of polygamy is problematic for essentially five reasons. The five most common concerns are as follows. One, leaving room for monogamous couples. Two, leaving room for women and other genders who desire plural relationships. Three, leaving room for asexuals, aromantics, and singles. Four, leaving room for homosexual relationships. And five, leaving room for plural parental ceilings. First, an unnuanced reading of Doctrine and Covenants 132 appeals to a patriarchal and androcentric model of polygyny. However, this exclusive polygynous model demonstrates the concerns of women who do not wish to engage in plural marriage without their consent, such as the case with the Law of Sarah. By extension, the standard model does not leave room for couples who wish to remain romantically or sexually monogamous. However, there is room for monogamy in the queer model. To demonstrate this, I'd like to refer to queer sexual orientations, not as universal orientation or sociopolitical identity labels, but specific practices within specific relationships. For example, I identify as pansexual by orientation. I engage in specific relationships differently, such as a relationship that's asexual, aromantic, and a platonic relationship with my sister. This is not to intend to mean that my relationship with her is void of intimacy, depth, love, commitment, and loyalty. Quite the opposite. I feel all those things for my sister and more, but we have no desire to engage in a sexual or romantic connection with each other. This does not mean my sister is any less important to me than, say, my husband, who I do desire a sexual and romantic relationship with. It just means the relationship dynamics are different. In the queer polygamy model, I could be sealed to my sister platonically for all eternity while also being sealed to my husband in a relationship that does include sex. I would be sealed to two people plurally, but I would still be practicing sexual monogamy. Thus, for couples who desire to practice heterosexual monogamy with a partner for all eternity, may be sealed to other people plurally, but only engage in heterosexual monogamy. Second, the account given in Doctrine and Covenants 32 does not explicitly address women who wish to also engage in plural relationships alongside their husbands. This exclusively polygynous model of polygamy can create a disturbing and problematic power imbalance among the sexes, especially for women in heterosexual relationships. Under the queer polygamy model, plural ceilings would be available to all consenting adults, not just men. As stated above, women could be sealed to other women, and just as women are sealed to children and parents. But I'm suggesting a change in policy which would allow multiple ceilings to women, to other adults, who they are or are not related to, just as men are afforded that privilege in LDS temples today. Though the scriptures do not state women can have more than one husband, it does not say they can't have more than one husband. In fact, more than one of Joseph Smith's wives was also married to other men. This shows there is room in our religion for women who desire to be married to multiple men, including heteroromantic, sexual, or asexual relationships. It would be up to the participants to decide the relationship dynamics of their sealing or marriage, just as Joseph Smith engaged in sexual relationships with some, but not all his plural wives. There are various reasons for plural marriage and sealings which don't involve sex. Granted, legitimacy of sexual relationships through a sealing or ritual may be important to avoid carelessness or promiscuity among sexual relationships. But above all, honesty and open communication is key to respecting the autonomy and volition of all participants, though I concede past participants of polygamy did not always practice in such a manner, namely Joseph Smith. Third, a candid reading of the doctrine of polygamy, also celestial marriage, does not leave room for persons who do not desire marriage or asexual or aromantic relationships. As stated above, there is room in queer polygamy for asexual and aromantic ceilings. Ceilings of kinship, friendship, and love may be offered to persons who do not wish to engage in sexual or romantic relationships with each other. Plural marriage for asexual persons could be an asexual woman married to a heterosexual couple, or three asexual persons who wish to be sealed together in plural marriage, which does not include sex. Again, sealing and/or marriage is not tantamount to sex. Asexual persons and persons who wish to remain single could be sealed to multiple people through parents, siblings, friends, and partners without committing to sexualized or romanticized notions of marriage and sealings. Fourth, the standard model is aesthetically heteronormative, leaving out the experiences and desires for homosexuals, bisexuals, pansexuals, and other queer persons. This may be one of the more difficult aesthetics to overcome because the common perception of Mormon theology implies there is no such room for homosexual unions in celestial cosmology. I do not see why this necessarily must be the case. I have written several pieces on how we could re-envision reductive views of creation to include homosexual relationships, including creation, procreation, reproduction, and families. In my view, homo-interactive creativity, which also includes homosexuality, is a required aspect of godly creation. If there is anything evolutionary biology has taught us, it's that the creation of life and flourishing of the human species is far greater than heterosexual monogamy. I have no reason to think that God wouldn't use natural means and natural laws of creation to enable life, goodness, relationships, parenting, and flourishing. If this is the case, it is possible for plural homosexual relationships to exist under the queer polygamy model. The queer polygamy model leaves room for same-gendered sealings and same-sex sealings, whether they are platonic, like with me and my sister, or homosexual, with me and another woman. It could be the case that plural marriage includes multi-gendered partnerships, such as sealings among sister wives, that may or may not include acts of lesbianism. If a man is married to two women and the women are bisexual, they may choose to be sealed to each other and have a romantic and sexual relationship with each other as well as with their common husbands. Likewise, a trans person or trans woman might be married to a cisgender man and cisgender woman, but if all identify as pansexual, it could be the case that they are all romantically and sexually involved with one another. The takeaway is the gender is irrelevant to whether or not there's sexual activity in the plural sealing. That would be up to the persons in the sealing to decide. Fifth, the standard model doesn't leave room for children who have autonomy to be sealed to multiple and diverse parents. In the standard model, children are the property of their fathers with little say of how they may be sealed and unsealed to their parents. For example, a child born in a heterosexual marriage may be sealed to both parents, but if the father is gay, divorces his wife, and both marry other men, the child of the first marriage would have four parents, one biological father, one biological mother, and two stepfathers. Under the queer polygamy model, the children could be granted plural sealings as well to both the biological father and mother, but also both their stepfathers. The children would be sealed to three fathers and one mother, though the dynamics of the relationship are diverse and fluid among the parents. Essentially, a child could be able to be sealed to all the parents they love. This is not the case under the standard model that focuses on who the child belongs to and in the eternities instead of who the child desires to be sealed to. A child should not be forced to choose between fathers and mandates of heterosexual monogamy or patriarchal polygamy. Children with plural parents should be granted plural sealings for those that desire them. No child should have to divorce a parent. Just as no wife should necessarily have to divorce a husband to take a second. The spirit of polygamy in this model is essentially the love of community. This is the new law that the saints of Zion should embrace in order to become gods. The spirit of polygamy encompasses diverse unions of gods and all the complexity and intricacies. The spirit of polygamy includes and reaches beyond the legitimization of sexual relationships. The spirit of polygamy means that I might be sealed to my best friend, regardless of whether or not we share a sexual relationship. Essentially, queer polygamy means infinite possibilities fulfilled by our infinite love for one another. Thanks.